Will LeBron return to Cleveland? I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown here with Thomas Bradley. In this week's episode, we'll get an update on the World Cup as it heads into the final match, Germany against Argentina. We'll also get an update on the Columbus Crew season.
And later, Steve and I talk about baseball's All-Star Game, which takes place this weekend, and how the appeal of the game itself has faded over the years.
But first, it's all anyone's talking about, sports radio, your buddies at the office. Will LeBron James return?
The king. Will he return to Cleveland? He's going to make his decision sometime soon. He's got to. We're in the middle of free agency. For more on this, we talk to Rob Aller of the Columbus Dispatch.
Rob, we see this just about every summer in the NBA. These big-name superstars, whether it's LeBron or Kobe Bryant or Carmelo Anthony, Chris Bosh, there's this huge push to sign them. Why is that? Why is it? Does this seem unique to the NBA?
Well, I think first off is because one guy can win a championship for you, and whereas other sports, that's not the case. You get a LeBron, you get a Kobe, you know, back in Jordan's day. If you get a guy like that, he can take you a long way. You can go from losing team to winning team to playoffs. So that's a big thing. I think you also get more marketability. You know, they've always talked about in the NFL, it's a team game. Not only that, but guys wear helmets. Half the people don't really know what they look like. You know, in the NBA, they're right there, close-ups on a guy's face. They are just more marketable.
It feels almost like a recruiting process all over again. It feels like these guys are making their pitches and schmoozing them over when really they're looking to just sign the right deal. Well, why is it more like a recruiting process rather than a money-making venture?
Well, that's a great point. I just think maybe it's in the DNA partly. You know, these guys have been recruited with the minor leagues and the camps, they move around, that type of thing. And I just think, you know, it's unique. I mean, you know, you look at NFL, you look at hockey, the whole free agency thing is not as big. Let's admit it, this thing with LeBron, it's bigger and it lasted longer than if he'd have won, the NBA title. You win an NBA title, mm-hmm. You get a few days, you get the parade, and then it's over. This is just, I mean, it's a strange sort of thing when, you know, what team you're going to go to is bigger than winning a title.
I was trying to think of the last really big-name NFL free agent to really kind of take over the news cycle, and I guess it was Reggie White, really. I mean, can you think of a bigger one? Maybe Peyton Manning a couple years ago, mm-hmm. But he wasn't at the peak of his powers like LeBron.
Yeah, I think Reggie White's a great call. You know, I mean, there's nothing like it. And it's odd. It's kind of like the off-season of, you know, baseball, the hot stove league is not as big as this, and things that are happening out of the season. Again, I mean, it's unusual, but I guess it's a great way for the NBA to keep their name out there, and they've done a good job with it. Whatever reason it happens, they've got to be happy about it.
All right, let's talk more specifically about LeBron right now. Just for clarification, it is Thursday at 11:03 when we are recording this, so this is changing by the minute.
Could be different at 11:04.
It could be different at 11:04. I've got Twitter open and checking. But right now, where is it with LeBron? It seems like he's down to choosing between staying with the Miami Heat and coming back home to the Cleveland Cavaliers. I know everyone has got wild speculation what they think is going to happen. What do you think is going to happen, Rob?
Well, I have to be careful because I thought he was going to stay when he made the decision and he left. So right now, my gut is that he is going to come to Cleveland. So for Cavs fans, don't listen to me because that probably means he's going to stay in Miami. But, if you read the tea leaves, both with his wife, you know, the little things like his wife going on Instagram and saying, you know, basically we're coming home and she can't wait, to the Cavs hiring an assistant coach who was friends with LeBron, to, opening up cap space for him. They are all in on getting him. So it's obviously the Cavs want him. That's no secret. What does he want to come to Cleveland? I would say that the one thing he could do to repair his image, and you know, we could debate all day whether his image needs to be repaired, definitely in Cleveland, of course, but probably even nationally, is come home and try to lead the Cavs to a championship. So a lot of things are working in the favor of coming to Cleveland. The thing that seems to be against it is no offense, but it's Cleveland, you know, and there's probably no big name that would do this other than LeBron James because of his attachment to the city, actually Akron. But, you know, Cleveland has tried to get big names in the past, you know, just like a Buffalo or, you know, a smaller market, and they just don't do a good job. So I think this is just a, you know, the planets are aligning here. And I think LeBron's going to come back. Again, they can put some big pieces around him. The question is whether they can get this Kevin Love power forward from Minnesota and not give up their new draft pick, Wiggins, to get him. Because I'm not sure how effective that is. You are getting a proven commodity, but you're giving up a young talent. So that's down the road right now. I think LeBron's heading to Brazil to watch the World Cup final. And we should know within a day or two, I would guess.
So the Browns have Johnny Manziel. The Cavs could have LeBron James. What do the Indians do? Do they have to trade for Mike Trout or Derek Jeter?
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Is Ted Williams, can you get him back out of frozen state to come to Cleveland? The Indians are just, that's all about pitching. You know, I think you've got to have pitching when you're a smaller market. And right now they're improving, but they don't quite have it. Plus they're in with the Tigers,
man, which
is just tough.
They're the third act in town by far right now.
Absolutely. I mean, the Indians will tell you, they're just so frustrated that, you know, they have done much better than the Browns have over the last, you know, really 15, 20 years.
Yeah, not even close. They're much
not even close, and yet the Browns, who are just, you know, lovable losers in Cleveland, get all, you know, they get all the airwaves, they get all the print, and so that's what you're dealing with when you're the Indians. When they were winning, the Browns weren't around. Let's not forget that. They were persona non grata, out of not even in existence. So the Indians made hay there and, you know, sold out, and people were desperate for a winner, and the Indians gave it. But how soon we forget, you know, even in 2007, I think the Indians were right there, primed to go to the World Series even. And the Browns have done nothing, but it's a Browns town for sure.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking NBA free agency with Columbus Dispatch columnist Rob Ahler. Rob, thanks as always.
No problem.
Is out of the World Cup, but there still is some great soccer to be played.
Lots of good soccer left to be played. Germany and Argentina face off in the World Cup final on Sunday. For a preview, we talked to Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Adam, the World Cup final is Sunday, but a lot of people are still talking about the absolute trouncing that Germany put on Brazil. 7-1, 5 goals in the first 30 minutes. How surprised were you at that beating Brazil took?
It's hard to really put it into words. I mean, when you're sitting there and you're watching that, I mean, you know, they give up the first goal and you're thinking, okay, well, you know, let's see how Brazil responds. And then it just, they had no answers. They looked as clueless as if you and I were out there trying to stop the Germans. I mean, they had no idea what to do. It was just shocking. I mean, there's no other word for it. You don't, when you get this far into a World Cup and you have, a storied country playing that, you know, is on its home soil, mm-hmm. you expect them to at least be a competitive team, but I mean they were completely outclassed, and I don't even know. I feel like there's got to be a story there that we don't know. I mean, there's got to be a reason why they played so poorly.
Well, they were missing two of their best players, but yeah, still very, very poorly.
Oh yeah, and I mean, you know, even though they're missing two of their best players, it doesn't change the fact that, I mean, everyone's heads were down, and I mean they gave up as soon as they fell behind. There was no fight. There was no. I mean, they were just like, okay, well, this is happening, and we're done. I mean, you expect them to at least put up a challenge.
Yeah.
It looked like in this World Cup, there's going to be a lot of good teams and there's going to be a lot of good matches, but there wasn't that one great team. Did Germany just solidify itself as the great team of this World Cup?
I think it'd be hard to argue against that. I mean, they've been pretty methodical and pretty efficient in what they do. I think that, you know, it won't mean anything if they don't win on Saturday, or on Sunday, rather. I guess I would shy away from
calling them a great team just yet because they haven't, you know, they haven't won the title. I think if they do win the title and you look at the run that they put together and who they beat to get there, then I think, yeah, you can definitely say, yeah, that was a great team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they still have one match left to go on Sunday against Argentina. Two of the best players in the world will see Thomas Mueller and Lionel Messi. What do you see happening on Sunday?
You know, it's the fact that Germany is coming off such a big win and Argentina had to go to penalty kicks to get there. I find this to be a really difficult game to predict what's going to happen. I mean, you see it all the time in other sports where, you know, a team will destroy somebody and then the next game they come out and they've got nothing. I mean, it's fair to wonder if coming off such a definitive win, if the Germans have anything left in the tank. You know, I mean, do they use up all their mojo or whatever you want to call it in that game? And will they have anything left for a final? So, you know, I think you're going to see probably two teams feeling each other out early on. I don't think it'll be as open as maybe some people would like to see. Other than that, I really don't know. I'm really excited to see what will happen because I don't think Argentina has played all that well. They haven't really impressed me all that much throughout the tournament, and yet here they are. And they're playing a German team that I could see having a huge letdown after such a decisive win a couple of days ago. So I really don't know what to expect.
Right, and their win in penalties against the Netherlands, they barely had any shots on goal. Not an inspiring win, obviously great to get on to the finals, but let's shift a little bit. Another great player, he's on Argentina's team, is Gonzalo Higuain, and he's actually the brother of crew star Federico Higuain, and that gives us a perfect segue into the crew. Let's talk about the Columbus crew. How is their season going, and how have they been since the beginning of the World Cup break?
Well, they are officially at the midway point of the season right now, 17 games into the season. They're about to start a really busy stretch where I believe that over the next 2 weeks they play Saturday, Wednesday, and they also have a friendly scheduled in there too. So it's about to get really, really busy for them. They're still in this sort of holding pattern, I would say, where they're not playing poorly defensively. They're limiting teams. They're not giving up too many opportunities. They're not scoring goals. And so they started the season with a 3-game winning streak. And since then, they have one win in their last 14 games. So despite all that, they are tied on points with New York for the final playoff spot. And as Major League Soccer goes, and as far as the parity goes in the league, they're just like almost any other team. If they were to put together a modest 3-game winning streak, they'd be right near the top of the table. So, they're still a long way to go, and I don't think they've played as well as they need to, but they're still in a position where if they and figure a few things out, they could still make the playoffs.
An incredible thought. One win in the last 14 games, and they're still in a position to make the playoffs. They've had 8 draws this season. Like, what is the most disappointing part of their offense? Is it the ability to finish and get that goal they need to complete the game?
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. They don't have a consistent scorer, and it puts pressure all across the team because, you know, if you're a defender, you know that if you allow a goal, it can be really hard for you to claw back. And if you allow two, you're probably not going to even get a draw in that game. So, it all comes down to the fact that, I mean, their only option at forward is Jairo Arrieta, who, after such a dominating breakout season in 2012, has just not been the same guy. He's not scoring at the rate that he was. He's not consistently finishing the way that we've seen him do it in the past. Unless they're able to bring in someone during the summer transfer window here, I just don't see them putting it together with the guys that they have on the roster because there's just a glaring need for a target forward, and they don't have the personnel to fill that on their own.
Adam, the World Cup usually, or often anyway, gives MLS a boost in both fan excitement and attendance. Have we seen that with the crew?
We'll find out. Their first game. Well, let me think. They came back and they played, so they were at Colorado, and then they had the home game against Houston where they had the tragic lightning strike. So they were expecting really good attendance for the Dallas game, but then it got postponed, and so that had a major impact on that. It's tough to say right now what sort of impact that will have on the crew. I mean, I think they'll probably see a little bit. But for them, I think the most important thing is they need to be winning. I mean, they need to, no matter the level of interest in soccer in the community,
I think that everyone wants to see a team that's exciting and that's winning and that's, you know, giving fans a reason to sit in the stands other than just to watch soccer. You want to be entertained. You want to see a team that's competitive. And I think if they figure some of those things out, that will make a much bigger bump in their attendance than, you know, the World Cup.
We've been talking about World Cup and Columbus Crew soccer with Adam Jordy from the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks for joining us, Adam.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thomas, I assume you saw that Cleveland just landed the 2016 GOP National Convention.
Yeah, the Republican Party seemed to be impressed with Cleveland's pitch for the convention, their hotels, the city.
Yeah, everything about it. Sports might have also played a role in that. For more, WKSU's Kabir Bhatia has this report.
In Dallas, the American Airlines Center is home to basketball's Dallas Mavericks and the Dallas Stars hockey team. Both teams have made the playoffs multiple times in the past decade, and that's one of the main reasons Dallas feels it lost out on the convention. If the Stars and or the Mavericks make the playoffs in June 2016, that's a scheduling conflict for the Republicans, not to mention a lack of hotel space. The GOP is looking at either June 27th or July 18th for its convention in 2 years. Ohio's Republican Senator Rob Portman says Cleveland will make sure it's ready whether or not the Cavs are in the playoffs.
Part of what Chairman Priebus was looking for was the ability to have a convention in June. We all hope the Cavs will be in the finals with Kyrie Irving and maybe some help from a former Cav named LeBron James. Who knows what's going to happen there? They may get in the finals. But if they do, you know, Dan Gilbert and his team have come up with a plan.
Ohio's other senator, Democrat Sherrod Brown, lives in Cleveland and applauded the choice, calling it another step forward in the city's renaissance. Cleveland has hosted only two national conventions, both for the Republicans, in 1924 and 1936. For Ohio Public Radio, I'm Kabir Bhatia.
So, Thomas, it's All-Star Weekend in Major League Baseball. I assume you're doing nothing all weekend but sitting right in front of your TV.
Exactly right. I'm going to be watching. I'm going to be watching the Home Run Derby and probably the All-Star Game. It's what I did growing up as a kid, but getting pretty excited about the All-Star Game this year. Yeah.
And the AL, a heavy favorite because of their pitching, especially.
I think so. The AL has dominant pitching, top to bottom. There were quite a few snubs on the AL pitching roster. If you think about a guy named Chris Sale. A pitcher for the Tigers, not on the All-Star roster, he'd probably be a number one or number two starter on the NL. So they're just top-heavy in the AL, and they're probably going to be the favorite this year.
How popular is the All-Star game these days? It's hard to compare it to when I was a kid, and it was such a big deal to me. Now, it seems like less of a big deal now.
I think it's less of a big deal as it goes on. I remember the same things you did as a kid. The All-Star game, you'd stay up late Sunday night, watch the best players in baseball, but maybe it was because there's more of an interest in baseball back in the day or more of an interest in kind of these highlight spectacles of an All-Star game. Now we get enough highlights and we can see all these guys year-round with the 24-hour sports news cycle that we have. So maybe it's just a change in the culture of All-Star games, but it's interesting because baseball's All-Star game keeps it's unique in a way
because it determines home field advantage for the World Series.
Exactly, there is some meaning to this.
There should be more meaning to this than the Pro Bowl or the NBA All-Star game, which literally mean nothing in the context of the rest of the season.
Exactly, like the Pro Bowl for football is a joke. It wasn't even like East West last year. It was team captains. It seemed like a flag football game.
A lot of players who are invited don't even go.
Right. It seems more like an organized flag football game where there's no hits. The last time someone hit someone for real in the Pro Bowl, I was probably 9 years old. But the All-Star game for baseball means something in that the winning league has home field advantage for the World Series, which is huge.
Is insane.
It is insane. Like, think about that. A collection of guys that don't mean anything just playing out there. Each pitcher gets like one inning and batters get maybe one at bat. And all of a sudden it determines.
So a good player on a terrible team who made the All-Star game, his team has no chance of making the postseason, could still have a huge part in determining the World Series outcome.
It's crazy. And home field advantage in baseball is big, but it's not as big as it is in other sports like football or basketball, for example. If the basketball All-Star game decided home field advantage, there would be chaos because, that, quite frankly, that no one takes the All-Star game in basketball seriously, and home court advantage in basketball is unreal. But it is a big thing. It's a 7-game series for the World Series, and if you get that fourth and final game under your crowd and with your fans, like, that can mean something, and that can be a difference in a World Series.
I'll tell you, I've been to a World Series game in Cleveland, and it was by far the most intense sporting event I've ever been to. Mm-hmm. It was the most suspenseful.
Yeah.
The World Series game was so suspenseful. The day before the All-Star game this weekend, the Home Run Derby, a mm-hmm. pretty new format where two players pick their teams.
Yeah. They pick guys, and they're not necessarily the guys that have had the most home runs in the season or your traditional home run guys, but these players know a little bit more than traditional fan voting, and they know which guys in a batting practice situation can hit the long ball. So it could be very interesting to see the Home Run Derby. It's also interesting to see how guys, after they compete in the Home Run Derby, do in the rest of the season. It's always kind of been a thing where you go out and try to swing a bat 100 times and hit 50 home runs in a night. Your arms are going to be kind of dead the next day, and your season's going to suffer, and there's always kind of like that, and there's the Madden curse in football, where if you're on the cover of Madden, mm-hmm. you don't do well. There's kind of the Home Run Derby curse. So it'll be interesting to see what these guys are able to do in the second half of the season and if it affects them at all. Kind of a fun format. I like this format. It feels very much like what I was saying with the Pro Bowl, where two guys pick teams, they go out and play baseball in the backyard. That's what the Home Run Derby should be. It should be a fun format, and that's what it's turned into. Really, I'm a really big fan of the Home Run Derby.
Well, hopefully more people care about it than the Pro Bowl. And that will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. You can always find us at WOSU.org/AfterTheScore and also on iTunes.
You can find us on Twitter at After the Score or listen on the WOSU Public Media mobile app. Until next week, I'm Thomas Bradley.
And I'm Steve Brown.